You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
As the old man sitting on my front porch, telling Gideon to get off my lawn.
I actually played online with a little bit of Modern, and I found a deck I think I like. I know the world is on fire right now.
Because if you want to care about something and be good, you have to be blue.
I'm fine with Magic in my world, what I can make it, when I can make it, because it's a special thing to me.
I heard you guys chuckling, and I immediately knew what I had said.
What am I going to do now? My opponent doesn't have any permanents on the battlefield. How am I supposed to win this game?
I may or may not be wearing pants when I take the picture. Though you brave soul, you survived what was most likely the Easter holiday with family. Now why don't you settle in with the family that you actually look forward to seeing each week? Yeah, it's TryHards. I'm Sean Seacrest, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. There was no big action set piece this weekend as far as premier-level tournaments go, so this episode is probably going to be a bit more freewheeling than we're used to here on TryHards. All that means is to make sure that your 5-point Hans harness is secure and settle in. Guys, as we get started each week, what are you drinking? Matt, what's the occasion of the evening?
Drinking a 60 Minutes Dogfish Head. We had it in the fridge. I love their 60 and 90 minute. I mean, it's just a classic to go to for me.
When's the next time we're going to have the 120?
Whenever they get it in, and actually they should be getting it in over at Total Wine, the end of this month, beginning of May or so.
Brian, what are you drinking this evening?
I am having a not large enough gin and tonic, and I'm on number two already. It's been that kind of day, so I am just going to be sipping on this thing and refilling as we go. As something that I've learned in my old age is that a good gin and tonic is only as good as the tonic water that you mix it with. So tonight is the Q tonic, which is ridiculously overpriced yet quite yummy. Makes it all worthwhile.
So do you only go organic lime or do you go sans lime?
I'm sans lime tonight just because we don't have any limes in the house. You know how it is when you get home from visiting out of town and you look around and you're like, geez, we really have nothing in the house. And so I had to run to the store real quick tonight and, of course, forgot limes, thinking we had like one, you know, there's always one or a half of one sitting around somewhere. And I wasn't about to sully this drink with a lemon, so I'm just going sans lime. But it's fine. It's totally fine.
So you have the new place that you moved into not so long ago. You have a garden. You have an herb garden. You have a separate building for your carpentry shop slash beer brewing. You don't have a citrus tree yet that you could have just sent one of your minions out to pick a lime off of?
Well, one thing I just found out this weekend, that avocado trees do grow in cold climates, so I may be slurping on some guacamole here in the near future. I'll just have to let you guys know if that happens.
That's the first frontier for TryHards merchandise if you do that. The TryHards
yes,
guacamole.
You know, your refrigerated section.
For some reason, that just takes me, I think of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia when they brand the eggs. That's what, yes, I'm thinking of right now.
Who wouldn't want a white-covered guacamole with a big, jutting black triangle coming right at them? That just says,
I mean, right at you. Idiots, that's who.
Pair this with Tostitos and enjoy, is what that says to me. We got a post at the Patreon site, patreon.com/tryhards, from Nathaniel. We're going to come back to the bulk of his post later in the show tonight. He asked me what I had been drinking, and I'm still trying to run out one of the best deals that I found, not only for a great beer, the Founders All Day IPA, but one of the stores near me has been selling the 15-pack for $16. That's right. That is not only delicious beer, but also great value. So Matt's on board as well. The Founders All Day IPA, 15-pack for just $16. And I'm a few in today, as this is the first day I've had off since accepting the new position and working like 9 or 10 days in a row. So hopefully the cast comes to fruition this evening without too many troubles. Matt, what Magic did you play this week?
I actually got to play a really fun, wacky draft. They've been trying to toss up the draft format a little bit because a lot of people haven't been showing up with it being towards the tail end of it. And a lot of people stopped wanting to draft the Modern Masters because of the price. So they've been doing wacky drafts for the last 2 weeks. And basically a wacky draft is they have a good variety of packs there. You buy the three packs, you throw in $5 for the prize pool, and you call it a day. I went down there, and since I'm a degenerate gambler, I went in and they said, hey, we've got the original Ravnica block. You want that? I'm like, well, yes, I do. I sat down with 10 other gentlemen, and four or five of them were also drafting the original Ravnica block. Now, there was a couple people. That was a little pricey still. I mean, it was $35, I think, with the $5 entry fee. There was a couple people that did have, the Eldritch Moon and the Aether Revolt, like some of the cheaper packs, which I didn't really care. We drafted as a huge pod, and it was crazy to see basically what people were pulling and like what decks people were building. I ended up with a green-white token. I was hoping for like a glare of Subdual or something like that. Flash blue for, I think, my 6-drop. And then also I had the 3-drop 2/3 flyer that destroys artifacts and enchantments. Good thing I had that, because there was, between all the packs we had going on, there was tons of enchantments floating around. It was an absolute blast, and they're going to continue to do it until every day this week up until midnight for the midnight pre-release on Thursday night.
I think that format is gaining some steam. Brian, you've mentioned that that's happened at your LGS before. Brian and I have done this ourselves. All of us have done this with other friends as well. And it's sort of the sealed version or draft version of create your own set whenever you pick packs from across Magic's history and then draft those. And it's as much fun, I've noticed, as the people that you draft with, the knowledge they have and the sets that they choose to bring with them. So if you can get some people to buy into this, really, if you can get four, it's a lot of fun. And then more than that, just exponentially increases the fun and value along the way. Brian, what'd you do with Magic this week?
Was on the road traveling, didn't get to play any Magic, unfortunately. Was getting ready to head out of town Thursday morning. So the Wednesday night Modern kind of got put on hold, unfortunately. So kind of caught up on coverage from the Worcester Open from SCG, and that's about it. So yeah, didn't get to play anything, unfortunately. Looking to play Modern tomorrow night with a different deck that I've been playing, so looking forward to that.
Now, Brian, I've got a question for you. I know over the Easter weekend, you were back at the Ancestral Lands in House Springs, Missouri. That is actually, of all places, where Brian and I first started playing competitive Magic with our DCI number. I remember Aaron was the name of the gentleman who owned the shop, but I can't remember the name of the shop itself. The last time that I was through House Springs, which was actually relatively recently over the holiday season because my grandparents live just past there now, was going to see them. I drove past, and my divining rod of history is actually still attuned because I was able to find my way off of the highway and to the building that used to house that shop, Brian. That shop is, of course, long gone. I'm just wondering whether it was on this trip or a previous one, have you ever tracked back down to that location, that formative location?
No, I actually, I sent you a text kind of related to this while I was there over the weekend. But House Springs, Missouri, if you can't tell by the name, is not the largest of metropoli in the country. But it is something amazing to me that every time I go out and visit Mom and kind of visit the ancestral grounds, as Sean said, of just how much has changed. And this is done with all kind of small towns that are just far enough outside a city to where the suburban creep kind of happens. And, you know, you see more restaurants crop up and you see just a few more stores and things. And so this was driven home to me. So not only did I try to make it out to Aaron's shop, they've kind of redone the road around there. It was a terrible washed out little thing. If it was ever raining, it was really, really hard to get to Aaron's shop just because, you know, that little dip, if you remember, Sean, it was really hard to kind of come up and over that. Mm-hmm. And you just couldn't get there. That was about the only way you could get there without going 10 miles out of your way. And so that's all new. It's all beautiful and paved. And of course, the building is gone and there's something else there. But I, you know, told my wife, hey, that's where I used to play Magic. And she's like, where? And I'm like, right there. And she's like, right there, huh? And she thought I'd probably been hitting the bottle a little too early in the day. And I'm like, no, seriously, it was. But no, bit of nostalgia. But I think that kind of lent itself to another realization, more of horror, because the Emo's Pizza that had since cropped up in House Springs closed and the building is razed. And then they've put in a sushi and hibachi place. And I'm just kind of, you know, spinning my head around saying this was a 2,000 person podunk farm town for the longest time. And I have no idea where I am right now. So it was a little bit strange coming back home. Congratulations, House Springs, on finally kind of making it to the medium time. I don't want to say the big time, but the medium time. And you'll always be home to me. But man, it was a little strange going home this time, I got to say. And if Aaron's would have been there, I would have said you would have been in the big time. But unfortunately, I don't think Aaron's ever bringing that shop back.
I got to take umbrage with what you said. You close in Emo's. That's regression, not progression.
I kind of agree with you, except they have this beautiful mural on the side of the concrete, like right when you pull into the town, and it says like House Springs in beautiful block letters. And I'm kind of like, kind of makes up for it a little bit because you can still get Emo's just like 5 miles away.
I don't know if I'm buying it.
You have a love obsession with Emo's. I do not understand that. I mean, it's good, but it's not amazing.
Early, you just have to stop talking right now. It's the same.
I know.
Thing.
I just gotta stop.
Yeah. All right. You just go back to your hot brown, and we'll cover the pizza here on the show. Yep. Sitting on the front porch of the Tibbetts ancestral lands is where I learned two things. One, how to appreciate a good thunderstorm rolling in when you're watching it. You want to talk about something that you do in a small town, and two, how to have a great beverage while you're watching that thunderstorm roll in. All the D&D and fried chicken that was eaten out there over the years and played will always be near and dear to my heart. As for what I did with Magic this week, not much. Started the new gig, worked like 9-10 days in a row. We're recording this on Tuesday night this week. If you were able to see the post about what our new schedule is going to be on Patreon, thank you for checking it out. Our new sort of progression is going to be to record on Tuesday nights, get everything up early for you as soon as possible on the Patreon site, and then come out at mtgcast.com on Thursdays. So we've had some changes go on around the tryhards' scheduling, and that's looking like what our schedule is going to be from here on out. Rachel, my Padawan, who I'm teaching how to play, she's getting ready to make her debut in Sanctioned Magic with the Amonkhet pre-release coming up this weekend. So I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, which will be Wednesday night, which will have already happened if you're listening to this later, of course. We're going to have a practice pre-release. I've been saving some packs. It's going to be Kaladesh, but just to give her an idea, I'll talk about this a little bit later in the cast tonight when we get to kind of how we prep for the pre-release and what I sort of assigned to her as homework. But we're going to have our pre-release practice session coming up tomorrow night, so I'm looking forward to that as far as my Magic played this week. Speaking of posting stuff on Patreon, guys, we have to welcome a new patron to the Tryhards Patreon family. And this is someone who is actually known to all three of us. We have to give a big Tryhard welcome to Josh Snyder. He is a longtime influence and stalwart of the Quincy, Illinois MTG community. He took a position that had him sort of out of that community for about a year, 18 months. He's recently gotten back into it sort of full throttle, and he continues to be not only a good player, but a deck designer and developer as well. And he's taken his time to jump in at the $10 per month level with us here on Tryhard. So, Josh, thank you very much. Appreciate it. I know I've already told you that in person, but we wanted to tell you that right here on the cast. And he'll get two raffle entries next week when we do our next raffle right here on Tryhards. You get one for each level you're at $5, and then one for each one above that. So if you're in at $5 a month, you get one entry, 10 gets two, and 20 gets, what is it, four guys, I think? We've rewarded our Heart of the Hards and our Heart of Famers with those extra entries. So if you like what you're hearing,
check us out. It's three. It's three.
Well, Matt's ever the accountant here on Tryhard.
I just looked.
Thank you for keeping us online and for not violating our contract that we have with our patrons at patreon.com. Check it out. We'd love it. If you love it, you can become a patron and become part of the Tryhard family for as little as $1 a month. You always have agency over how long that goes on. If things come up and you want to roll that back, we understand that as well. Check us out, patreon.com/tryhards. Guys, we've had a couple of polls up at the Patreon site, patreon.com/tryhards, and one of them is still going on, but one of them came to a close a little while ago, and knowing that we weren't going to have a lot of tournament news to go over, we wanted to talk about them this week. The first poll that we put up simply asked you, how many people have you taught to play Magic the Gathering? Over your career as a Magic the Gathering player, how many have you taught to play the game? The options were 0, 1 to 3, 4 to 7, 8 to 10, or more than 10, I'm a master teacher, or the other option, I'd love to, but I never had the chance. The most popular answer was 4 to 7, getting 36% of the vote. 1 to 3 was right there at number 2. And then 8 to 10, getting 18% and 9% of the vote. I'd love to teach someone, but I've never had the chance. Guys, I know that we're just kind of going over these results real quickly from the poll, but Matt, do any of those numbers surprise you? Do you think that more people love to teach the game, or do you think that the people that you would get the opportunity to teach are just a little fewer and further between?
I think it's fewer and further between. I think that's mainly because a lot of the people that you would see that or know casually generally aren't your friends, because if you have that group of friends, you know, most of your people already play or they're aware of what it is. Sean, you had the instance of where she kind of came to you and said, hey, I'm interested in playing type of thing, or I heard you play and I want to be taught. I think a lot of the people you see that you would really be teaching, like just fresh, would be just strangers, but those people don't come out to the shops a lot of time, you know, to where there would be a community to say, hey, I'm going to teach you to play this, unless it's a special event or you have a really good local shop. So I think if you had a local shop that was really geared towards a wide variety of things, you know, comic books, board games, things like that, you'd have a lot more opportunity to teach people. I know I've only taught probably 2 or 3 people to play in my life. Since I came back to the game, I haven't taught anybody.
Brian, when we posted this poll, did it make you reflect on how many people you've taught to play the game? And were you surprised that that number was not lower or higher?
I'm surprised that that number absolutely was not lower. I kind of feel a little bad. You know, here we are kind of touting ourselves as ambassadors to the game. And obviously there's a lot of people out there, smart listeners that they are listening to us, who have taught all these people. And so kudos to you all out there doing that. I feel like a lot of times I don't teach people to play like from the scoop and nuts like my daughter, but fine tuning things, talk about deck building strategies, all that kind of stuff, just what Magic players do. To really hear that this is how many people that people, you know, have taught kind of from the beginning, I think is pretty incredible. Kudos to our listeners for being as engaged in carrying on the game as much as they are.
Second poll is up at the Patreon page. How much Gideon is too much Gideon? This was brought about with the announcement of Gideon of the Trials coming up in Amonkhet that we'll all get our hands on this weekend. He's looking to continue his nearly mind sculptor-esque domination of Standard, and so we asked you, do you love Gideon and all his planeswalking forms, or have you had too much of the He-Man-ish planeswalker? 18%. Someone needs to show the world how it's done, and that someone is Gideon. 36%, enough of this indestructible game-warping BS. 45%, whatever. I just wish I had his stern but sexy jawline. I think I would probably fall into that latter camp as well. Tibbetts, what's your early response to the new Gideon of the Trials and how it may warp not just the actual gameplay of Standard, but the way we look at the game now?
The way we look at the game, I'd say enough of this indestructible game warping BS. That's just me as the old man sitting on my front porch telling Gideon to get off my lawn. Not real excited to play Standard going forward, even with the release of the set, just because I feel like it's another one of those things where you can already tell what the metagame is going to be like. I hope I'm proved wrong. I really, really do. And I say that for the health of the game and how important Standard is to the game. Excited that they actually did something with a multiple colored planeswalker with Nissa. That was cool. And the scalable casting cost, I think that was actually pretty cool too. But just another Gideon, even understanding that Wizards was going through, you know, with the rotation issues and not supposed to be two in the same cycle, etc. It's too early. It's too early for another Gideon. And I think that was one of the mistakes that they've had. So I'm hoping this gets kind of drawn back to a whatever. I just wish I had his stern but sexy jawline, because I definitely don't. However, right now, I'm going with my old man on the porch. Enough of this indestructible game warping BS.
Matt, where do you fall on this one?
I kind of wish Gideon would swallow a grenade and never come back. So that's where I fall on that one.
But see, guys, I have a soft spot for, like, Gideon Jura.
See, I never played Gideon Jura, so that's why I don't think I have a soft spot for him.
Yeah,
so
I played a ton of Gideon Jura back in the day, and he will always have a soft spot in my heart. You know, he's still a big player in Modern and, like, the blue-white controls and things like that. So, yeah, I love Gideon as a character, as a planeswalker from in his original form. But it's almost kind of like how many Jaces is too many Jaces. I think we're already starting to see a little bit of people just getting a little tired of Gideon.
Yeah, it's a little bit of Gideon exhaustion. But with the Jace topic, Matt, Brian brings up a great point. Are we just Gideon exhausted as a community, or is it enfranchised players who are being worn thin by what seems to be the never-ending drumbeat toward the Magic movie that Wizards keeps sort of pushing with these recurring flat characters? Remember, we talked about this a couple of casts ago. Round characters, characters who change during a story, are the interesting ones. Gideon seems to me to be suffering because he's continually flat. He continually has the same "I'm going to turn into an indestructible creature" ability. He's continually white. He doesn't show any sort of change. It's just sort of rinse and repeat, and oh, this time our hands are a little bit more wet than last time.
See, and I agree with you. I think it's a combination of that and just planeswalker fatigue in general. Only one I really give a crap about, honestly, and this is because I read the Magic stories, is Liliana. Because I keep wondering, how is Liliana going to stab? She changes, but how is she going to stab the Gatewatch in the back? Because, I mean, it's going to happen. But that's the only one I really give a crap about. And the rest of them, I'm like, ugh, come on. I mean, it is what it is, and I think it's planeswalker fatigue as a whole. I think, you know, Morrow posted out, he said, you know, we recognize this. We're going to change the way we approach planeswalkers coming up in the next set, because when people started to complain about this, that's when they were actually designing Amonkhet. So by the time everything, they said, okay, we need to change this, it was time to design our Devastation.
It's actually a process, and it's one that, as long as Wizards acknowledges they're taking the input and the feedback from the community, I think we're all more than willing to stand by and watch this process unfold. Now, as much complaining as we have done about Gideon, you better believe every one of the tryhards is hoping to open a Gideon at their pre-release so that we can actually win some matches during that time. So, yes, anything that will help us win, we would be all for at that point. Speaking of pre-releases, guys, what do you do to prepare for a pre-release? Matt, how deep do you go into other information? How much time do you spend poring over the spoiler? Or are you someone who likes to just show up and have the organic experience when it comes to pre-release?
No, I actually like to do a little preparation there. And usually, and Sean, I've shared these with you too, there's usually a couple things I print out, just single page notes.
Yep.
One of them is kind of the rough price list on what things are going for, because that tends to fluctuate quite a bit. I can kind of say, okay, I know this is the price list of what's, you know, what Gideon's going for. I know it's going to go up or down type of thing. So if anybody wants to trade them off, or I want to pick up some cards, I can pick them up when they're a little bit cheaper. And then the other thing is kind of it always is a little spreadsheet. It has like each color's instant speed combat tricks type of thing. And I just kind of glance, I print that out, kind of glance over it.
I'm interested by the psychographic that could be prepared, Brian, by the fact that Matt's mind ran first to the dollar value of new cards.
I know that. I was thinking the same thing. Like,
absolutely.
He's not thinking of winning the pre-release. He's thinking of, ooh, what's the value I can get out of this pre-release?
Well, I was gonna say the second page has to do with me winning the pre-release so that I can maximize my value out of my money.
Yeah, Matt determines whether or not he won the pre-release based on the trades that he made while he was at pre-release, not his record during the pre-release. I know one of the things that I like to do for prep is to look over, and this is very basic, but for the non-rare and mythic creatures, I like to just kind of get an idea of whether Wizards has determined this is a 2-toughness set or a 3-toughness set. Sure, you're going to have rares that have more than that, but on average, the common and uncommon creatures, which you'll see most of during draft and sealed, that toughness average will fall between 2 and 3. And if it's higher than 2.5, means it trends toward 3, then your 2 damage removal in this set isn't as valuable. But if that average is under 2.5, meaning you have more 2 butts, then that 2 damage removal is more valuable. That's just kind of one of the things that I like to look for and kind of have an idea in my mind when I go into it. Brian, what's your pre-release experience like? How do you prepare, or do you like that organic experience where you just walk in, read the cards, and go?
I'm kind of more of a just walk in, read the cards, and go. But I can't say that I don't have, you know, some idea of what I'm going to be seeing beforehand, just because I love getting on, as everybody does during spoiler season, and just kind of seeing what's out there. So I'll have a good idea of, you know, ooh, there, I could build a cycling deck, or I could build the -1/-1 counters deck, whatever. But really, it's I love getting the card pool, and everybody knows by now how much I love sealed. Getting the card pool, kind of the cards you're dealt, and building the best thing that you can with it. So there's something to be said for just cracking those packs, laying them all out, you know, by color, and just kind of seeing what naturally appeals to me. And I really do like that. I think it's really cool. Now, if I open a bomb rare or something, obviously my mind starts working toward, oh, can I build around this? Is it just going to be one of those things that I can bring in sideboard? Is it just, you know, forcing square peg into a round hole kind of thing? I've had some pretty good success doing that. And I think part of it is too, it's a lot more fun for me to not be so stressed out about, you know, oh, I have to get this and I have to get that. And I hate playing against the people who are like, oh, if I only would have had a couple of these, my deck would be awesome. And I'm like, you know what, guys, you can if in one hand and you can in the other and it weighs about the same. Just have fun with what you built. If you lose, you lose. It's pre-release, et cetera. It's not, you know, that highly competitive of Magic. Did you give it your best go? Great. Yeah, you didn't open the bomb rare. That guy got it. Whatever. It is what it is. So I really do like to just kind of crack and go and build what you can. And I think that's a lot of fun.
If you haven't pre-released in a while, life has kept you away from it. Gavin Verhey on the Mothership put out the Amonkhet pre-release primer. This is a good read over. It will tell you exactly what promotional gimmicks they're doing, how the product is going to be packaged, what you're going to open. Not what cards, obviously, but in what form they're going to be given to you. Check it out. I forwarded that to my Padawan, Rachel. Of course, I made an addendum when I forwarded it to her. I said, stop reading when you get to the heading that says two-headed giant. Because I didn't want to melt her mind going into her very first pre-release. So we'll be talking about that when we do our little pre-release primer practice later in the week this week. Hopefully you have a great time at your Amonkhet pre-release this weekend. But now that we're pre-releasing and we have the full spoiler, Matt, that means that there is always the concern of what's going to be valuable, what's going to be trading at a high rate, and what may or may not be worth pre-ordering. Do you have some kind of do's and don'ts, Matt, for pre-order season? Because this is it. We're recording in it. This is hype week this week. The full set is out. The spoiler can be broken down. Websites from Star City to Face to Face to everywhere else that retails Magic cards individually for sale has their pre-order prices up for Amonkhet. Are there some easy do's and don'ts, not card specific, but trends, things that you look for when you decide to or not to pre-order new cards?
Generally, and I say generally, I mean the vast majority of the time, probably 95% of the time, it's not worth it to pre-order cards. The caveat to that is during spoiler season, we're well past a kind of like where, you know, the entire spoiler's out. But during spoiler season, if you see one pop up and you go, wow, that's going to have a really good interaction with X, especially if that X is in Eternal format or some sort of Commander format, then maybe you say, huh, you know, $2 card right now. It's a rare. Maybe I just pick them up for $2. And if they go up, they go up. If they go down, they go down. The times you do want to pre-order is when you see it's going to be an obvious staple and the price is generally low. Now, if you haven't heard it before, there's a Planeswalker tax. In this case, the new Gideon, yeah, I think he's at $40 now or $30, something stupid. He's got a tax on him because he's a big flashy planeswalker. Anything that does a unique effect can easily kind of, I wouldn't say make you money, but can easily go up in value. I am going to mention a couple of specific cards here that have kind of unique effects. One of them is the Blue God, the Kefnet, the Mindful. I can't decide if this card, and really a lot of people are on the fence, if this card's going to be good or bad in control decks. It does kind of a unique thing. So I was looking at that and I'm like, you know, it's only X dollars. I think I got them at $350 a piece. I'm like, it's $350 for a mythic. You know, I'll grab a playset for myself. And that way, if they shoot up to $10, I'm not spending $40 on a set. Another one that I think is going that kind of does a unique thing is the Drakehaven, which is the enchantment that whenever you cycle or discard a card, you may pay one to create a 2/2 flyer. I was actually listening to, I can't remember, it was at 6 a.m. in the morning while I was traveling to Indianapolis yesterday. I was listening to a podcast. Somebody compared this over to Astral Slide. You have to look at it this way, but what if it was Astral Slide and you create a 2/2 with flying? Wouldn't that be good? And then you had a mana there. And everyone on the podcast was like, yeah, that would be really good. They're like, well, that's what this card is. But it creates such kind of a unique effect where it's dependent on cycling or discarding, but it's a powerful effect. So that's something you want to look for. Kind of the last thing you want to look for is anything with easy eternal playability. Last set we had Fatal Push. That was a very, very obvious card. This set, there's really none that I've seen people are like, oh yeah, you know what? This is going to be eternal playable, except for As Foretold. That card's already quite expensive, so you don't want to you don't want to pre-order that. Then the other one that other people are kind of looking at is Glorious End. That's the end the turn at the beginning of the next step, end step, you lose a lot or you lose the game. That's another one people are kind of like, you know, have some eternal playability there. And then any card that's just going to be a staple or super powerful. Those are kind of what I look for, but generally I don't, unless I really think I'm going to make a killing on it, I generally don't order pre-order cards.
On pre-order stuff, do you ever fault people for just pre-ordering something because they like to play a deck? Let's say, you know, they like to play white-green or whatever, and hey, these look like these are good cards. I'm going to pre-order them just to make sure I get them in case they go up. I always find myself never faulting the person who kind of just has that, hey, I'm going to spend the money right now and do it. Do you ever find fault with doing that just to kind of do it, or does it come down to dollar value for you?
No, I don't fault anybody for doing that, especially if you have a tournament. Like, the actual release is the 28th, 3 weeks later, is when Louisville is. That's a pretty tight timeline to get decks together and do some testing. So if you need to test, grab them. I do not fault people for that, especially, like, if you're buying Mythics for $1.50 or $2 and you're like, I see some playability here, grab it. I mean, I do not fault people because it's not going to go much lower than that. If you can pick up rares, you know, at 99 cents. Paying $1 for a rare is not a big deal. So definitely stuff that you know, you want to get, or you just say, okay, you know, like on the Blue Gods, I pick myself up a playset. I'm like, okay, if they go down to $3 Mythics or $2 Mythics, I spent $15 and they went down to $8. So I only lost $7 or $8. So I'd rather get them when they're less expensive than have to, you know, all of a sudden, oh crap, this is the next Torrential Gearhawk and it's $22 a piece. Walk through it and say, why do I want this card? Am I actually going to play it? Is it actually good? Or do I just think it's a freaking sweet card? And I just want to, you know, I just want to be like, oh man, I have these cards. And then all of a sudden, well, no, it's kind of a trap card.
Yeah. If you have a play style, don't be afraid to leverage that play style when you're evaluating cards. Matt, I want to circle back to one thing you talked about a minute ago, and that was the Planeswalker tax for something unique. We have a unique Planeswalker that's not named Gideon. Nissa's new form is now apparently green-blue, because if you want to care about something and be good, you have to be blue in Magic. But she's also the first X-casting cost Planeswalker in history. Are you seeing a Planeswalker tax applied to the new Nissa because of her unique role?
Currently, as we're recording on Tuesday, these cards are about $18 to $20. A Planeswalker that's played in Standard, that's about the going rate for something that's played, not, you know, not tons. I would say, you know, 20-30% of decks maybe. You know, it's a staple of Standard. A Planeswalker that's played sometimes, look at Obnixilis from the past sets. $8-$10 maybe, something like that, $8. And he's played, you know, just a little bit here and there. You see one or two popping up in control decks. She does such a unique thing. I can't specifically talk about her because I'm not sure if she's going to be good. Maybe she's going to be awesome in Eternal formats. Maybe she's going to be awesome in Standard where, you know, she's good on turn 3 and she's good on turn 10. It reminds me a lot of the stupid Death Touch guy that had Morph that came back from the graveyard.
The dinosaur.
You know, when you first looked at that card, it was one of those like, is this overcosted? Is this good? Is this bad? Same way with Smuggler's Copter. A lot of people were like, oh, Smuggler's Copter is not that good. And then all of a sudden, it's a 4 of in every single deck. This card, I'm not exactly sure, but this definitely has a Planeswalker tax on it because to maintain with invocations, as you call them now, to maintain this, you know, this, let's say a $20 price, the 4-drop Gideon that's played in Standard right now is only like $28, $26, and he has dropped to $20 multiple times. To maintain this $20, she has to be played in probably 20% of decks as like a 3 or 4 of. I can't evaluate this, but I do think she's too pricey for what she currently does. I think this is probably more of like a $10 to $12 Planeswalker.
We'll watch and see how that plays out over its life. as it gets involved in the standard scene. As we get ready for Amonkhet pre-release this weekend, we want to take an email. We get a chance to get an email from you or a post on the Patreon page from one of our patrons. We'd love to talk about it on the show if you give us some food for the grist mill. Well, that's exactly what came in this morning from Nathaniel Hooker, one of our patrons on the Patreon page. He said, "Hey guys, what are you drinking today?" Right now, this is at 8:10 this morning. I'm having a hot shot espresso and black coffee because it's a wee bit early, but be sure my day will end with a pint or two tonight. Wondering what your thoughts are on the pauper community on MTGO. I recently invested into the online realm, and pauper was my entry point. As a longtime paper Magic player, it's increasingly more difficult to get out and play as life happens. Now expecting my second child, congratulations, Nathaniel. And I found that MTGO is now the best way to fill my need for planeswalking, you know, when I get the chance. I found it was surprisingly simple to accomplish, very inexpensive, except for a few specifics, and relatively competitive as an inroad into playing our favorite game. Since then, I've pushed a little further and now have modern elves ready to battle. He says he brings this up because as the population of Magic players catches up to technology and the digital version of Magic becomes increasingly more relevant to WotC's earning report, does the long-standing online format of Pauper need to be looked at again as a great stepping stone into the wider gap of the digital realm? And do we see WotC secretly pushing Pauper to edge in with their quote-unquote downgrades to common in recent sets? So, Matt, I'm going to start with you as the one with the most digital experience with Modo. I think Nathaniel's having a very relevant and familiar experience right now, which is as life happens and more of us Magic lovers and longtime players are forced to, well, at least impersonate adults on a regular basis, we have to get our competitive outlet on Modo. And as a pauper specific availability, do you think Modo is adding to the ability for people to make the jump online, as Nathaniel asks, or is it not a good place to look at as an entry point if you're moving from paper to digital?
Pauper is the perfect place to do it. The vast majority of the decks are anywhere from $20 to $80. And the only reason that Pauper decks are expensive is because Red Elemental Blast, I think it is. It may be cheaper now, but for the longest time, Red Elemental Blast was a key card in Pauper, and it was like $10. The other was a black card from Arabian Nights that's a common.
Oubliette.
It's like Cyclopean Tome, maybe something like that.
Are you sure?
Oh, yeah.
It's not
Cyclopean Tome? Yeah.
Is it Cyclopean Tome or is it Oubliette, or was that
Oubliette,
in the dark?
It's Oubliette.
Oh, okay. Oubliette. Yeah, that's been
so
very popular card for years.
Yeah, that card is only expensive because of Pauper. Now, like Red Elemental Blast right now is $5, but the vast majority of the decks, I'm talking online, the vast majority of the decks you can get in for under $30, $35. WotC's a little bit slow on the banning of the cards because the Drake that was overtaking Pauper for a while there beat down Pauper for a little bit before they actually banned it. I think that they recognize it as a format. It's a great way to get in there. And I'll tell you what, Pauper's a lot of fun. If I could find a Pauper community down here in paper, I would absolutely play it. It is such a blast. Now, I think that WotC should embrace it more as an entry level into kind of constructed Magic. There's a lot of community there. I played Pauper when I first got onto Magic Online when I was essentially a broke, you know, ex-college student that just graduated looking for a job. I was grinding that out for quite a while, and I just had a blast doing it. I do think with these new products that are coming down towards the end of the year here, the Magic Digital Next, which is what they're talking about, the online platform. They're not talking about like a specific, like a replacement for Modo. They've announced that it's going to be kind of like the overarching pillar that handles all the online play. I do think they're going to use all these statistics and look and say, okay, how many people are playing this? You know, do we need Pauper Leagues? I think Pauper Leagues would take off. So go to pdcmagic.com. That's papadeltacharliemagic.com. And that is Pauper Magic Deck Challenge, I believe it's what it's called. but this is where I started. They have all the stats up and running. They do free tournaments, I think it is, once a week maybe, where they award a couple tickets out for people playing. And then they have a lot of like stuff from like Pure MTGO, things like that, that they kind of explain how Popper works. But yeah, you're on the right track. Starting with Popper, it's a great way to get a feel for the program as a whole, and it's extremely cheap to get into as well.
Yeah, Nathaniel, I wish this question had come in a day or two before we recorded, because in my community here at my LGS, one of my buddies, Christian, is the most into the Popper scene player that I know, and I didn't have time to get his reaction after your post today. If I can get that from him coming up, I'll post it up at the Patreon page. Brian, same question, but from a different angle. As a father of two who has a full-time job and a family that would probably like to see you more than they do, how do you balance your home life with your magic life?
Oh, geez. Well, isn't that like the reason why we cast? It's an interesting question for sure. I think there's thousands and thousands of people out there. And as this game just gets a little older and as the players get a little older, this is going to become a question. You know, how many pros do we see, you know, starting to have kids and settling down, and what are they doing as ambassadors and things like that? It's a tough thing to do. It really is. You just kind of have to find that balance. And I think the biggest thing I would have to say with my family is communication, you know, kind of give them enough lead out that, hey, this is coming up. I want to play in this. You know, it's going to involve some travel, or daddy's going to be gone for a day or a night or whatever. Hey, what can I do to help get ready for this? It's all about that communication and understanding. On the other side, they might not understand, well, why do you want to go play cards? Why don't you want to spend time with me? And to let them know, hey, this makes daddy happy. This makes me happy. I want to do something for myself. You know, be honest.
It's because they don't know how to play Esper Control, and you need some reps against Esper Control, or maybe in Legacy, you need some reps against like Countertop or Miracles. The four-year-old doesn't play Miracles very well yet.
No, she's pretty terrible at playing Miracles, to be honest. She thinks Sensei's Divining Top should spin around, and it doesn't. And so
right.
Daddy, it's okay. Yeah. It's a question I kind of live every single day, and I think hopefully give some insight to the people out there in the same boat. Magic takes a lot of time, and you know, sometimes I become jealous of these guys who are at tournaments every weekend. I'm like, man, that sounds like a ball. And then other times when I'm out in the yard playing with the kids and throwing the ball around and stuff, and then I come in and look at coverage and I'm thinking, ooh, they've been sitting in a hall for the last 8 hours of the day, not enjoying the outside air and doing some other things. That's got to suck in the spring and the summer when it's really, really nice outside. So, you know, there is a balance there. And, you know, as we've all said before, we're not going to be on the pro tour. So we don't know that level and kind of the commitment that goes there. I'm fine with Magic in my world, what I can make it, when I can make it, because it's a special thing to me when I can play it. And I think that's the thing. I want to take advantage and enjoy it when I'm able to, as opposed to thinking it's something I have to do just to keep up on top of my game all the time.
And the one thing that I've learned from Brian is that don't be afraid to tell your kids when they ask you for something no, if daddy needs another sneak attack or another counterbalance to go in his deck.
Exactly.
Brian, so I want to twist this question a little bit then. You know, if you were to download, or if you had a PC and not a Mac and you were to download Magic Online, could you see yourself buying into, you know, a $30 or $40 Popper deck, let's say $50 Popper deck, and then if they had leagues where you could sit down, play one game, you know, that was 20, 25 minutes, maybe just to unwind after, you know, after a long day, everyone's in bed. Could you see yourself just sitting down and then maybe taking a week to complete a league or so?
I've struggled with this before. I've actually downloaded Modo once on a computer and then just kind of let it sit there. You know, so I actually have an account that I've never actually accessed. So it's one of those things where I'm still kind of a purist on this, and Sean and I can be the old man purist about this. I still like the interaction of like actually holding cards and things. I've made a Popper deck before. Sean, you and I remember the Magic Belt. Mm-hmm. We had that tournament in Quincy that one time. That was really fun.
Oh, that spilled over to Galesburg, and I won. And we'll tell that story, maybe in episode 50 coming up. We'll reminisce a little that story. But I still have it, and I know where it is, and I've lost a little weight, so it still fits.
we should maybe post a picture of that for episode 50.
I will make that happen.
Yeah, make that happen. So anyway.
I may or may not be wearing pants when I take the picture.
I hope you're wearing nothing down below.
For the love of all that is holy, please, let's not scare away the patrons. To come around to back to the question, I think that was one of my first times actually building just a pauper deck, and it was actually a lot of fun. When I was teaching somebody to play Magic way back in the summer of like 95 when I was living in Chicago, really, really sharp guy, Sean, you know him, Kent.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating because I had all my cards with me and I would go off to work during the day and he just kind of sat down with the rules book and he's like, I think I know how to play this game. And so we sat down and played and he obviously knew what was going on. But then he's like, man, we should do a twist to this. Why don't we just put all the things out and, you know, like in these piles of just commons and we'll just draft it. And so we would just have our own little drafts at night and stuff and do that. And it was a ball because I was playing with cards and he was playing with cards you never even thought about. And that's kind of what Pauper does. It forces you to think about the power level of cards you never think about. And it's a lot of fun. Pauper has become so popular now that, you know, there are stock decks. And if you're not playing one of these like top tier Pauper decks, it's, you know, you're kind of seen as, oh, newbie, newbie, newbie. But at the same time, there's still so many commons out there, and there's so many more coming every single set release that this is something that I'm kind of looking forward to doing, is having a few on hand because we can all build them. We have so many of these cards lying about. It's not a problem putting together a playset, whereas, like you said, Hurley, you know, it's not like we have to wait for something to, you know, go below $20 so we can buy a playset. You know, we can just go down to our collection, pull out four, and be like, woo! I got my keys to my deck, you know, going on right here. So, yeah, that's really cool. I think I could see myself doing that, kind of getting on Moto, getting on a Pauper League, and just kind of playing that out. That actually sounds like a lot of fun. I've actually been invited by a couple guys in the community to come over and play some Moto before just because I don't have experience doing it. And they're like, oh, you should do. Just come out and hang with us some night. Because that's what they do for fun, is just kind of hang out, talk, you know, have a beverage, whatnot. And I think that would be a lot of fun to do, and I'd like to give it a try.
Whenever Lauren, my girlfriend, whenever Lauren's brother would come in town, he's a paper Magic player as well. We used to love to sit down, crack open a beer, hop on Moto and do a draft. It's so much better having somebody else there or having somebody else just kind of like on Skype, kind of bouncing ideas off of or just talking amongst yourselves about it. I don't know. I just didn't know if that was one of those things that you would say, oh, you know, I could see myself doing this, because I think we've talked about this in the past, like just kind of off cast. A single game online of Magic takes 20, 30 minutes maybe, and then you can just kind of walk away and then come back and do one 2 days later with the new league structure they have. So it's a fantastic thing. And, you know, to circle back to the original question, I do think that with these new digital, like this new digital pillar they're putting out, I think they're recognizing, hey, we need to be able to pull in these people who can't sit down for 6 hours a night and play. We need to pull in somebody who say, hey, I just want to play a little Magic. You know, maybe I can sit down for a half hour, 45 minutes. And it's been wildly successful, even though they've actually been reducing the amount of prizes that are supported. People don't care because they're just like, I can, you know, knock this out real quick. Just to give you guys a quick kind of a rough estimate here, I just pulled one of the popular Esper decks, and guess what the cost is on Magic Online?
20 tickets.
25.
25 cents.
For the whole deck?
For the entire deck.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. So, I mean, you pay what I think it's $10 to sign up for Moto, maybe $8, something like that. But the entire deck is 25 cents. I hope that they recognize even more that, hey, there's a lot of people out there like us, tone down the time commitment and maximize how people are playing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Wizards tackles that digital conundrum going forward. Nathaniel, thank you so much for your post on the Patreon page, for your patronage. We look forward to tackling questions like that going forward.
Yeah, that was a great question. Really great question. And I think that's funny to think about it, is to take it from that point of view of, we always think about, you know, going from how to get people into this game. It's kind of funny going from the other way around.
Yeah, it's almost like Wizards' next conundrum isn't how to introduce people, but how to keep people into the game. But the first thing that you're going to have to do, if that's the case, is, well, not cast out your enfranchised players. At least don't just cast them into the elevator with Matt Hurley. Hurley, are you going to cast anyone out of the elevator this week?
cast out. Yes, it's an uncommon from the new set. It's a 4-mana, remove target permanent. It's got flash and it's got cycling. Don't need it because maybe they don't have permanent. Cycle it. You can get them for anywhere from 50 to 75 cents now. Get a playset of these because these are going to be another $2 or $3 uncommon moving forward. This is going to be an all-star. So make sure you pick them up, especially now kind of before they go up a little bit in price. But yeah, it'll be an easy $2 moving forward.
We said at the beginning this was going to be a little bit more of a freewheeling show. So, Brian, I'm going to bring you in on this. You're the resident prison player. Was I the only one who had a reaction that was giggling when Matt said, if they don't have any permanence, you can cycle this? I think you're already winning the game if they don't have any permanence. I mean, we need to go. I mean, breaking news, Brian is the legacy prison player. Brian, are you ahead in the game if your opponent doesn't have any permanence? Go.
I love it. It's kind of like, well, what am I going to do now? My opponent doesn't have any permanence on the battlefield. How am I supposed to win this game?
I just sneak attacked my Evercool in. I don't know what to do now.
Jeez.
Yes.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, non-land permanence.
Don't.
I'll cycle it. I got nothing to cast it on. Whatever.
I heard you guys chuckling. I immediately knew what I had said, but no, I didn't want to go back on it.
No need to listen to limited resources this week before your pre-release weekend. You've heard it here. Hurley says if your opponent doesn't have any permanence, you're ahead in the game. All right, that's the kind of breakdown you...
Hey, we'll put that on the first try-hard shirt as my quote.
That's this
you heard it here.
In the elevator, cast out. Oh, you're on try-hards. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew this week. Our god of brewing is Brian. What do you got lined up for us, big guy?
Gentlemen, we have all kinds of fun cards that we could build around and things, but I'm very excited about... the new gods from Amonkhet, and I think Wizards has done a very, very good job making them aggressively costed, giving them abilities that are very, very consistent with their color. I'm very curious. I think it's kind of come out on which ones are going to be maybe seeing the most play, especially at the beginning of Amonkhet release. But my task for you this week is to rank the gods. Where do you think they're going to fall in kind of power order? We have one in all five colors. I want to know where you think they're going to fall and what kind of effect you think they're going to have on the metagame. So, Sean, I'm going to kick it to you first. Of the five gods, Ronas, Hazoret, Bantu, Oketra, and Kefnet, which of them do you think are going to have the most effect on Standard? 3 minutes to brew.
Don't hold me to repeating their names because I haven't memorized them all, so I'll probably just refer to them by color. Immediately out of the gate, we have a history that says aggro rises to the top in new formats. So that would be Red Hazoret, I believe it is. I look for him to have the biggest impact, or her, to have the biggest impact on sort of opening weekend and then the weekend after that. By the time we get to the Pro Tour, I could see a number of things. I could see the Red God. I could see the Blue God, Kefnet, drawing cards in late in the game, putting lands back in your hand. There's really no downside to that, especially if you have a come-into-play ability. The Black God, which gives you an early aggression outlet for sacrificing, and we have tokens and various other things that you can actually get value out of sacrificing now. I would look for those three to be big role players. Typically, pumping things of that nature, more mid-rangey effects like we see on the Green God, Ronas, evolve later in the game when it's sort of the metagame has taken shape and maybe you're looking to angle shoot that. And I just don't know if I see an early role for the White God at this point. I'd go red first, then blue, black, green, white would be my order at this pre-release broadcast.
Hurley, where are you thinking they're going to rank by color or by name?
I'm going to completely disagree with Sean here. I actually think the Green God, Ronas, is the most powerful. I think Oketra is the second most powerful, the White God. I do think there's a decent amount of, I wouldn't say token makers, but there's a decent amount of creature cards and cards that kind of go wide a little bit. And he's a 4-drop, does not have haste. So you can actually kind of count on your 2-drop. And your 3-drop to put a creature or two out, and then your 5-drop to put a couple creatures out, especially if you're casting that cat that is a 5-drop that makes 2 other creatures. There's 3 creatures right there. I think Oketra and Ronas, the green and white god, are fighting for first. Then I think Hazoret is right below that one. And then I think Kefnet and the Black God is definitely the weakest. But I think Kefnet is one of those, like I said earlier, just kind of does a unique thing. He reminds me a lot of Maloku. Bouncing lands, drawing cards, doing all this stuff. I don't know if he's good, bad, and different. I just don't know how that works. I'm going to rank him relatively low. But I definitely think Oketra and that Lifelinker Cat Lord, and then Ronus with just, you know, big fat green creatures is fine. And I like Ronus the most because, you know, on turn four, your turn one or two play, even if you have a mana dork that maybe has two power, you can give it +2/+0, and then you attack in with Ronus, and all of a sudden you've got a 5/5 indestructible death touch.
What it comes down to is the text on the card that allows them to be an attacker. I think they all function as kind of a planeswalker with their extra ability, but Ronus the Indomitable, the green, for a green 2, 5/5 death touch indestructible, I think, is the easiest one to get online as an attacker. The others just have too much pulling against them to actually get them on board. The black one, Bontu, is the most fascinating to me because a 4/6 menace indestructible seems really, really good, but you have to have a creature on your side die that turn, and, you know, sacrificing your own creatures, I just don't see that as being something that is going to do. So I'm going to go Ronus 1. Kefnet, I agree with Sean. Kefnet the Mindful, the blue one, I think is going to be the second most powerful long term. I think blue is going to have kind of a comeback with control comboed with white or red or something else. But I think there's just enough there to give that card advantage and to bring that one online. Hazoret probably as the red one, as Sean says, aggression is probably going to play a big part. That's probably the third easiest to get online. Like I said, Bontu is kind of the wild card. Not sure if that's going to be something to do. And then Oketra. I'm just not real high on it, Hurley. I know what you're saying about tokens, and you know me, I love a token strategy. Not thinking that's going to be one that is really going to rise to the top. But hopefully somebody's going to break out with some good deck building, and we'll see after pre-release and especially after Pro Tour.
We'd love to see how you rank the gods after your pre-release weekend or after you get a little bit of experience with them along the way. Our 3 minutes to brew this week, predicting where we see the pecking order for the gods of Amonkhet. That brings us to what we did to get better at Magic this week, or what we might do before our pre-release weekend. Brian, I'll start with you. What'd you do to get better at Magic, or what will you do to get better before pre-release this weekend?
Oh, before pre-release, like I said, I will definitely go over the spoiler list again and kind of just do a once-over on getting familiar with the cards. But again, not too much. Just want to kind of have an overview, have an understanding of what I'm looking at when I go in. What I did to get better at Magic this week, read a great article by one of the great deck builders of all time, Zvi Moshowitz, put up a great deck called Red Drake on Channel Fireball. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but it looks
I'm all
just
over
like
this. It looks great. It almost reminds me of Fires of Yavimaya, if you're old enough to remember that.
Very, very good reference. So yeah, this is right up my alley. Kind of would pull my blue-red standard deck that I've had together for quite a while now just to put this thing together. This looks really, really fun. And so this has got me excited. I said that, you know, I'm not really excited to play standard. These are the kinds of decks that I love when the deck builders kind of latch on to the new cards and kind of give me that little extra oomph to maybe go out and try to explore this and build it. One of my favorite cards from maybe the last 5 years in a total casual format was Spellheart Chimera, which was basically an X3 creature, the X being the number of instants and sorceries in the graveyards. Wizards has given us that same card back with Enigma Drake. Enigma Drake is basically equal to the number, its power is equal to the number of instant and sorcery cards in your graveyard, except it's a 4-butt this time and flying. And so it does not have trample, but for 3 casting cost, I'll take that all the time. The other thing I did to get better at Magic this week was realize just how much Elaine Bergeau is kind of a control freak and a micromanager of this game that we love, and it's starting to make me very, very tired. Guys, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but all of the changes that happen with the Worlds, with the Pro Tour, with the Nationals, with the RPTQs, with, you know, the release of the new set Ixalan coming out now in September, and just having a week before the Pro Tour, it's just kind of made me a little, you know, head spinny here. And if Wizards would just leave things alone for a while, I think they would kind of get themselves out of this maelstrom of having to just react to the community instead of be a proactive company. And I just kind of hope she takes a step back. And I know it's not all on her, but I just hope that Wizards as a company takes a step back and lets me get better at Magic on my terms, so I don't have to keep reevaluating where Wizards is in their growth, and so that we can just understand when things are being released and kind of what the rules are, so we don't have to keep fighting back about that, whether it's for a new DCI number, whether it's for is Nationals here, is it not, what are the pro points, what are not, what are the payouts, what are not. Everything's in so much flux all the time. And if they would just kind of leave it alone, I think that would be a very good thing.
Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
I hate to say it. I didn't mention this earlier. I actually played online with a little bit of Modern, and I found a deck I think I like. I know the world is on fire right now.
Well, it's called Doran, right?
No, it is not. That piece of trash can go right in the trash. So Modern Bug Delirium, and it's got a bunch of like one-ofs in it. So it's kind of a silver bullet deck, but then, you know, it's got the three Thoughtsy, three Inquisitions. I played it through a couple leagues, made a couple 5-0s on the leagues, and then there was it placed highly in a big Japanese tournament a few, like 3 weeks ago or so. And I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Nothing warms my heart more than them, and this happened multiple times, them casting their Death Shadow and me tapping my Jace Ferns Prodigy, drawing a card, and then discarding Big Game Hunter to it.
That's Magic the way Richard Garfield intended.
I was smiling ear to ear every time I did that. I played that, and then I did a lot of spoiler. We didn't talk a lot about the spoilers this week, but I did a lot of spoiler studying and kind of figuring out where Standard's going to go. I do think that this set is going to shake up Standard a decent amount, and especially once the 4-drop Gideon goes, that's really going to shake things up, because there's a lot of really powerful cards in here. A lot of people are saying it feels lackluster. I've heard that quite a bit. I think this is one of the more complicated sets they've made in a very, very long time. There's a lot of synergy in this set. There's a lot of interaction, even though it's a lot of creature-based stuff. Hopefully it's less of I cast my Gideon and beat you down my Gideon, more of like, oh, I do this, I have this card on the battlefield, so this takes effect here, and that's a lot of stacking and things like that. So met with my boss yesterday, and I told him, hey, I said, on Friday I'm going to be working a couple hours late. He goes, you work so much, I don't care. And which I'm like, okay, that sounds good to me, because I plan on going to the midnight pre-release on Thursday night, and I'm sure by 2 or 3 o'clock I'm going to be like, oh, this is an awful, awful decision, but I'm super excited about it.
Who knew that in real life, Hurley was able to cast Treachery on his own boss at that point and fool him into that? The thing that I do before a pre-release is listen. As much as I try to listen regularly, I always make sure to listen to limited resources this week. If Marshall and LSV and the rest of the revolving cast of former hosts coming back on limited resources, if they only charged for the show that they do leading up to the pre-release, they could probably be thousandaires based on the people who listen to that for their information. If there's 1 week out of the year that you should stop listening to this podcast and turn on limited resources, it's the week before a pre-release. Check that out. They are a part of my go-to guide whenever I get ready for a pre-release to help me get better at Magic, the limited specialists that they are. Oh, you brave soul. You made it all the way through another episode, and a freewheeling one at that, of Tryhards. Have a great time at your pre-release this weekend, and we'll see you next week here on Tryhards.